1.08. Dahlia stared in fascination at Epluvian Maximal, wondering how much of him was mechanical and how much was human. From the little she could see of his body beneath the coolant robes he wore to preserve the integrity of the machine parts of his body, the answer was not much. There was precious little left of the Magos that spoke of their shared racial kinship.
"You have never seen an adept of the Mechanicum like me?" asked Maximal.
"No," said Dahlia. "Most of the ones I've seen still look human. You sound human, but you don't look it."
Maximal turned to Adept Zeth and blurted a crackling burst of code, the view screens attached to his host of mechadendrites flashing with his amusement.
"Oh, I'm sorry," said Dahlia. "I didn't mean to speak out of turn. I was just curious."
The robed Magos turned back to her.
"You understand binary code? Without modifications?"
"I've picked it up,"
said Dahlia, embarrassed at the scrutiny. Maximal nodded his oblong helmeted head, the whirring lenses adjusting to better view Dahlia.
"You are right, Zeth. She is quite remarkable. Perhaps this project of yours might actually bear fruit after all."
Dahlia looked past the hulking form of Maximal to the wide window that looked out into the domed chamber where Jonas Mylus was strapped to the Theta Wave Enhancer, beneath the sightless eyes of the thousands of psychers encased in the coffers of the dome.
"It will work. I'm sure of it,"
whispered Dahlia.
"Let us hope so, young Dahlia," said Maximal. "A great deal depends upon it."
"You have a lovely voice," said Dahlia. "It's rich,
like a well-spoken man of the Romani.
Why would you bother with a voice like that when you look like you do?"
"We all have our foibles, Dahlia," explained Maximal. "This voice belonged to a great singer of operatic verse, and the sounds remind me of all that is good in mankind."
Dahlia didn't know what to say to that, so returned her attention to the view beyond the armored glass that was all that separated the control room from what was about to happen. An army of calculus loci attended to a bewildering bank of cogitators and logic engines that controlled aspects of the Akashic Reader she had not known about. Many of the symbols on the panels were unknown to her, or used words she didn't know. The control room was a thrumming box of tension and activity, the sense of something great and portentous heavy on everyone's features. Even the servitors looked tense, though Dahlia told herself that it was just her imagination.
"When does it start?"
asked Dahlia, turning to her colleagues. Caxton and Severine shrugged, and even Mellicent had no answer.
"It starts now, Dahlia," said Adept Zeth, appearing at her side and placing a bronze gauntlet on her shoulder. "All of this is down to you."
"Then let's just hope it works,"
said Dahlia, looking at the distant, serene features of Jonas Mylus.
"Terran horizon clear," said an automated voice. "Astronomical light readings approaching test window parameters. Alignment on track."
"Removing pentobarbital wards from psychic foci," said the toneless voice of a calculus logi.
"Increasing aperture of pineal antenna."
"Magma generators diverting power to collectors."
"What do all those things mean?"
asked Dahlia.
"You remember I told you that it takes a great deal of energy to breach the walls separating us from the ether," said Zeth.
"Yes."
"Well, it takes a form and amount of energy that cannot be generated here on Mars."
"What kind of energy?"
"Psychic energy," said Zeth, "in quantities that can only be harvested from one source, the Astronomicon."
"The Emperor's warp beacon? The one that guides starships?"
"The very same," said Zeth,
pointing towards the metallic disk at the dome's apex, from which golden spears of energy were arcing.
"Only the Astronomicon has the required psychic energy that would allow the Akashic Reader to access the sum of all knowledge we seek. We will divert a fraction of its power into the chamber to empower the psychers and open the gates to the ether."
"Won't it disrupt the Astronomicon if we use its power?"
asked Dahlia. Zeth looked over at Maximal, a moment's hesitation giving Dahlia the answer she sought.
"It will," admitted Zeth, "but only for a short span of time."
Dahlia stepped towards the consoles that operated the Akashic Reader, assimilating what Zeth had just told her into her understanding of what was being said and what the words carved into the wooden panels meant. She had no real idea of how powerful the Astronomicon was, but understood that even a fraction of its energy would be greater than anything she could imagine. She looked into the chamber at the waking psychers and knew with sudden, awful clarity that she had overlooked something.
"How are you going to divert the Astronomicon's power?" she asked.
"Mars will be in alignment with Terra soon, and we will pass through the radiance of the psychic beacon. The pineal antennae will collect the energy and divert it to the psychers."
"Is that how you've always done it?"
asked Dahlia urgently.
Adept Zeth shook her head. "No, this will be the first time we have passed through the Astronomicon."
"Oh no," whispered Dahlia. "The calculations are wrong. They're all wrong."
"Wrong? What are you talking about?"
demanded Adept Maximal.
"The energy readings," said Dahlia. "I understand now. The different readings, fluctuating maximums and minimums, apogee and perigee. That's why the numbers were different. We assumed a baseline average, but that's not what we're going to get now."
"Dahlia, explain yourself," said Zeth. "Talk me through your concerns."
"The raw data you gave us to work with," said Dahlia. "I based the upper levels of assumed energy transference on the psychic strength you've used so far, but this time the energy levels will be hundreds, thousands of times greater than before. The reader used fragments of reflected and refracted psychic bleed, scraps and trickles of psychic energy, but this is going to be a raging torrent."
Psychic confluence in 5, 4.
"Adept Zeth,"
said Dahlia, tearing her eyes from Jonas Mylas and spinning to face the mistress of the Magma City.
"We have to stop this. It's going to be too much."
"Don't be ridiculous," said Zeth. "We cannot stop it."
"You have to,"
begged Dahlia.
"Please, it's only when they go wrong that machines remind you how powerful they are."
3, 2, 1, continued the countdown.
"No, oh, throne, no,"
cried Dahlia, turning back to the domed chamber. Blinding light, brighter than a million suns, flooded the chamber of the Akashic Reader as the full might of the Astronomicon poured its energies through the coffers and into the blind psychers. Shouts of alarm and warning klaxons blared almost immediately. And over it all, Dahlia could hear the agonized screaming of Jonas Mylas. The desolate uplands between the volcanoes of the Tharsis Montes were bare of structures or habitation. Any landscape habitually trodden by the god engines of the Legios was crushed flat by the unimaginable weight of the titanic war machines. The only artificial creations were those placed there by Legio servitors to act as target practice. The land between Ascreus Mons and Pavonis Mons was rugged and inhospitable, an area of demarcation between two warrior orders who shared a region of Mars but little else. A few of the nomadic vassal tribes that plied the ashen wastelands between the great forges of the Adepts had tried to found settlements there, but even they were forced to concede that living in the shadow of the Titan fortresses was untenable. The great golden gateway of the Legio Tempestus fortress at the end of the Ascreus Chasmata stood open, and three titanic engines, resplendent in their cobalt-blue armor plates, marched out. Kill totems and trailing honor banners billowed on their weapons and from enormous masts fitted to their carapaces. Metallus Sabrinia, the engine of Princeps Sharak, led them out, followed by its smaller siblings, the warhounds Raptoria and Astrus Lux. All three machines were fully armed and ready to fight. Their gun servitors and autoloaders cycled up to battle readiness. A host of bestial, armored Skitari divisions swarmed at the base of the canyon, but Sharak knew that they would be of little use in any engine fight that might develop. Only a fraction of the Tempestus Skitari remained on Mars, but Eichmann, the commander of the Martian divisions, had demanded the right to march out with the engines, and Sharak wasn't about to deny the towering brute the chance to lead his augmented warriors. To march out with such a force was almost unheard of on Mars, but with tensions running high in the Tharsis region, Princeps Sharak was taking no chances with the security of the Legio's fortress. With Princeps Senioris Cavallario protecting the reactors of Epluvium Maximal, Sharak was next in the chain of command, and the security of Ascreus Mons was his responsibility. He just wished he had more engines to secure it with. Two warhounds and a reaver fresh from refit was no force to protect an entire base, not when the engines of Mortis were walking. Cavallario's battle group was on its way back, but a ferocious dust storm had blown out of the west from the slopes of the great mountain to confound the Auspex, so, for all intents and purposes, Sharak was on his own. Did Mortis have violence in mind? Sharak didn't know, and just hoped this was another of Camulos's posturing walks to demonstrate his legio's favour on Mars.
"Dolan," asked Sharak, "where are they?"
He didn't need to clarify who he meant.
"Getting engine returns and heat blooms from 4 or 5 engines, my princeps," said his sensori, feeding the information to Sharak through the manifold. The view through the cabin windows was a swirling, seething mass of orange and brown dust particles, the smooth finished rock of the canyon sides barely visible in the gloom. Sharak needed no visual cues to command the Metallus Sebrenia, for he was navigating and driving his engine via the sensorium of the manifold, a much more reliable source of information than the poor sense of his eyes.
"I estimate 60 kilometers out, closing fast," said Dolan. "Possibly 4 engines, striding speed or better."
"Thrawn, they're big," hissed Moderati Bannon.
"Warlords," said Sharak. "3 of them, and maybe a river."
"Probably," noted Bannon. "But that heat bloom in the center, it's too big for 1 engine. Might be another marching in close formation. They could be trying to hide another engine."
"Dolan?"
queried Sharak.
"What do you make of that assessment?"
"Could be. But the void returns I'm getting don't look like separate tracks. It's hard to tell. The storms blowing in from the west are messing with every piece of surveyor gear I've got."
"Keep on it,"
ordered Sharak, flexing his fists in their sheaves of steel and wire. A rumbling thunder vibrated along the great pistons and cogs of Metallus Sebrenia's colossal frame as the god machine sensed his anticipation through the manifold. Sebrenia was an old machine, a grand dam of the Legio with an enviable honor roll, but she had faltered in her last battle and taken severe damage. The journey back to Mars for refit and repair had been difficult for both man and machine, and Sharak could feel the pressure to perform in this engagement.
"Any word from Mortis?" he demanded. "Any response to our hails?"
"Negative, my princeps," replied Bannon. "I'm just getting static. Could be the storm is playing with the vox, but I doubt it."
"What about the Stormlord? Any word from Princeps Cavalerio?"
"Last transmission we had said they were heading back at flank speed," said Bannon. "Nothing since then."
"Come on, Indias," whispered Sharak. "I can't hold the Kazmata with a reaver and 2 warhounds."
He returned his attention to the manifold, trying to make some sense of the squalls and interference that fogged his perceptions of the world around his engine. The Martian networks had been jammed for days with scrappy, fragmentary code blurts that appeared to have no point of origin, and which ghosted around the system before vanishing just as inexplicably.
"Adept Eskund, reduce reactor power 12%, ordered Sharak. "Bannon, bring us to 1/3. Hold us at the mouth of the canyon."
"Yes, my princeps,"
said Bannon, easing down on their speed. Sharak opened the manifold to the princeps of the 2 warhounds and said,
"Kasim, Lamnos."
Ghostly images, rippling and unsteady, formed in the air between Sharak's eyes. Kasim, the swarthy skinned predator, and Lamnos, the ambusher who killed from the shadows. Both warriors worked well together, Kasim fighting with the aggression of a hunter to flush prey towards the killing fire of his brother-in-arms.
"Princeps Sharak," said Kasim, his voice thick with the accent of the hives of Phoenicius Lacus. "You have hunting orders."
"Maybe,"
said Sharak.
"Spread out and run a crisscross search pattern out towards the last fix we had on Mortis.
I want to know where those damned engines are."
"Are we to engage?"
asked Lamnos. And Sharak almost laughed at the eagerness he heard in his fellow princeps' voice.
"Your courage is admirable, Lamnos. But if Mortis are coming in the strength I think they are, a pair of warhounds won't stop them."
"Then we just let them march on our fortress unopposed?" demanded Kasim.
"We don't know where they're marching yet,"
Sharak reminded his bellicose warhound drivers.
"They may swing westwards and carry on north to the Olympic of Fossae assembly yards. Or they could bear east towards Mondus Oculum. We don't know."
"They will rue the day if they cross the Tempest Line," snarled Lamnos.
"Yes, they will,"
agreed Sharak.
"But until they do, and are within our engagement zone, you are not to fire unless fired upon. I won't have Camulos saying we started an engine war on Mars thanks to a headstrong Tempest driver. Understood?"
Both princeps grumbled their assent, and Sharak shut down the link between them, as the warhounds loped off into the wind-whipped ash and dust. Dahlia raced from the control room, chased by screaming alarm bells and the blinding light of the Astronomicon. Howling cants of binary squealed, and the air foamed with torrents of panicked data streams. Tears spilled down her cheeks as she heard the agonized screaming of Jonas Mylus, the sound echoing from the front of her skull to the innermost reaches of her psyche. Dahlia had promised herself that he would be safe, that her work would not see him killed in the name of scientific progress. That promise had been reduced to ashes, and she couldn't bear the sound of his screams. She passed into the towering shaft chamber that rose up to the magma city, seeing that the low archway in the silver wall was now filled with a great bronze gate. She ran towards it, molten light spilling through a circular window in its center. "No!" she cried. "No! He's dying!" She beat her fists on the metal door, bruising the flesh of her hands and drawing blood where she clawed at the glass with her fingernails. Dahlia pressed her face to the window, straining to see anything through the dazzling brightness that filled the chamber and rendered what was happening within invisible.
"Open the door!" screamed Dahlia. "Open the damn door! We have to stop this!"
Dahlia rushed to the keypad at the side of the door and began punching in the code required to open it. She had not been made privy to the doorway's code, but had skimmed the access protocols from Zeth's new spheric aura. Further warning alarms shrilled, and a pulsating amber light began to strobe angrily. She felt a restraining hand on her arm and angrily threw it off.
"You can't go in there!"
shouted a voice at her ear. Caxton's.
"I have to!" she wailed. "He's dying! Oh, Throne, we're killing him!"
"It's not your fault,"
said Caxton, drawing her arms back from the door before she could punch in the final sequence of digits and turning her away from the light streaming through the window.
"It's not your fault!"
"It is! It is!"
sobbed Dahlia, burying her face in Caxton's shoulder and holding him tightly, as if the force of her grip could somehow end the horror.
"We need to get in there!"
"You can't," said Caxton. "Not yet. You're not soulbound."
"I don't care. I need to get in there."
"No, the psychic energy will kill you if you go through that door."
"Like it's killing them," said Dahlia. "I've got to."
She pushed Caxton away and entered the last digits of the access sequence. Like a rolling surge tide, the light boiled out from the chamber of the Akashic Reader, and Dahlia plunged into the roaring blizzard of psychic power. Princeps Kasim felt the savage glee of Raptoria as he pushed her to flank speed. Like him, Raptoria was glad to be walking beneath the sky, unfettered and armed for war. The between times when she languished in oily shipholds, restrained by scaffolds and manacled to the deck, had been a cage for her warlike heart, a cell for an angry killer that had denied her sublime skills as a hunter. This was her first walk since returning to Mars for repairs, and Kasim felt the urge to kill in every piston, gear, and metal joint of his mount. He looked down at the golden skull and cog medallion that hung around his neck and wished that he could reach up and touch it for luck, but his hands were encased in wire-wound haptic sheaths. Princeps Cavallario, the Stormlord himself, had presented Kasim with the medallion, honoring him in front of the Legio as they boarded the ships for Mars after the brutal, hard-fought campaign of the Epsiloid Binary Cluster. 6 engines had been lost and many wounded, including the already battle-scarred Victorix Magna, the towering war machine of the Stormlord. Cavallario had brought the badly wounded engines of the Legio back to Mars, leaving the bulk of Tempestus under the command of Princeps Maximus Carania. Months of labor by the Legio artisans had seen the damaged engines repaired and brought back to their former glory. With the refit works virtually complete, the Legio was ready to transfer back to the expedition fleet, to once more extend the rightful domain of the Imperium. Kasim eagerly awaited the Legio's return to the forefront of the fighting, for Mars had changed in the years since Tempestus had led its war machines across its umber plains. No longer was Mars united in the dream of the Great Crusade. The clan forges and magi had fallen to petty squabbling and spiteful acts of violence, dragging the red planet into an age of suspicion and mistrust. Even the warrior orders had changed, forming factions and isolated bands of martial strength to protect what resources they controlled. Mortis had been no exception, extending their control through the guise of protection to many of the smaller forges and more easily pressured warrior orders. No. The sooner Tempestus could get back to the real work of the galaxy, the better.
Where are they?
He hissed, bringing his warhound about and angling his course to intersect with that of Astrus Lux. The view from his canopy was mostly obscured by the billowing ash storm, the thick, armored glass streaked with a dusty residue that was the bane of cogs and gears.
20 kilometers, my princeps, said Moderati Voric. Signal returns growing in strength, but they keep fading in and out, as if there's some kind of interference pushing out just ahead of them.
Keep us steady, warned Cassim.
And keep a close eye on the sensoria. They'll probably have warhound pickets as well. Yes, my princeps.
Cassim felt the power beneath him, the fiery heart of Raptoria straining at his commands and anxious for the hunt proper to begin.
Soon, he whispered.
Cassim was relying on hard implants, and the myriad surveyor apparatus fed information to him via the MIU, data flowing directly into his cerebral cortex as streams of neurons. So far, Raptoria was running only passive scans, the better to hide her presence in the storm. An active scan of the area would reveal more of their surroundings, but would as good as announce their presence to any undiscovered hunters. In such conditions, a warhound lived and killed by its stealth. As strange as the concept of such a huge machine being stealthy might appear, and Cassim trusted his instincts to keep Raptoria safe. The interference plaguing the sensoria was troubling, and he could feel Raptoria's unease in the skittishness of her controls. All his other senses were undimmed. He could feel the nearness of Princeps Lamnos's engine, the bite of the dust on Raptoria's hull, and taste the oily, ashen flavor of the wind as it howled around him. Somewhere out in the dust was the enemy, even if they hadn't been classified as such yet. But Cassim couldn't see them or know how close they were. Such situations were a Titan driver's worst nightmare. That your enemy could be plotting a firing solution without you even knowing he was there. Cassim knew it was only a matter of time before Mortis and Tempestus drew blood. The words exchanged between the Stormlord and Camulus at the Council of Tharsis had as good as guaranteed it. Cassim's warrior instinct was to strike the first blow, but he would not disobey a direct order from Princeps Sharak.
My Princeps, called Voric,
as the ground suddenly shook with a thunderous reverberation.
Hard returns, dead ahead, reactor blooms and void signatures. Where in the name of the machine did they come from?
Demanded Cassim.
Identify. Unknown contact, but it's too big to be a warhound.
The vibration of the ground had already told him that this was no warhound. Too big for a reaver.
A warlord?
Responded Cassim, his excitement and fear manifesting in the warhound's posture as it crouched close to the ground.
No, my princeps, said Voric,
staring in horror at the sight emerging from the howling dust clouds. Cassim felt the chill of its shadow envelop him, and his skin flushed as he saw the enormous engine stride towards them, its every step rocking the very earth with its monstrous tread. A towering fortress of brazen red metal with black and silver etchings moulded on the great bastion towers of its legs, the enormous engine dwarfed the warhound as a grown man would dwarf a babe in arms. Arcing battlements crowned its immensity, the colossal mountainous fortress engine unlike anything Cassim had seen before. He had heard the rumors and looked over the technical specs and blueprints of similar machines, but nothing had prepared him for the awesome spectacle of so gargantuan a war machine in the flesh. Weapons capable of obliterating cities depended from its wide shoulders, and its head was a grinning, horned skull of burnished silver.
Imperator, said Cassim.
Princeps Cavallario scoured the manifold for information, reading nothing through the barking, squealing hash of scrap code fouling the airwaves. He could get nothing from Princeps Sharak, and feared the worst. Mortis was on the march, and Cavallario wondered if Princeps Camulos was about to make good his threat of a coming storm. His battle group was marching at flank speed towards their fortress, and he could feel the ancient heart of Victorix Magna protest at the demands placed upon it. His own heart beat in time with the great machine, and he felt a growing numbness spreading through his limbs. Cavallario fought against the sensation, willing both his mortal frame and the immortal might of his engine to keep going.
Do you really think Mortis is about to attack Ascreus Mons?
Asked Moderati Kuiper.
I don't know, confessed Cavallario, their words spoken through the link of the manifold. I believe Camulos wants to drive our Legio from Tharsis, but this seems bold even for him.
Then perhaps this is the first strike in a larger war, suggested Kuiper.
Cavallario kept his thoughts close, remembering what Camulos had said at the Council of Tharsis. Sides were being chosen, and battle lines drawn all across Mars, and while Cavallario couldn't bring himself to believe that the Titan Orders were about to go to war, this maneuver of Mortis seemed deliberately calculated to rouse the ire of Tempestus. Well, Indius Cavallario was not about to rise to the bait of this provocation.
I don't think they will attack, he said. I think they want us to attack them, to fire the first shot so as to justify their retaliation.
Our warriors will only fire if they're fired on first, said Kuiper.
Cavallario thought of the engine commanders at Ascreus Mons, Sharak, Lamnos, and Cassim. Sharak could be trusted to understand the situation, but Lamnos and Cassim? Their hearts were fiery and warlike, as was expected of warhound drivers, but where heart and mind were in balance in more experienced warriors, Cavallario feared what impulsive decisions they might make in the heat of the moment.
Get me Sharak's battle group, he said. I need to make sure they know not to fire first.
Understood, Stormlord, said Kuiper,
returning his attention to breaking through the interference. Cavallario opened the manifold link to Magos Argaia.
How long till we reach the Mons? Update. At flank speed, we will be within visual range of Ascreus Mons in 17.4 minutes. However, the reactor is running 27% in excess of what I believe it can safely handle at this time.
Increase reactor output, ordered Cavallario. I want us there in less than 10.
Warning, to increase reactor output beyond the current rate of... I don't want to hear any excuses, snapped Cavallario. Just make it happen.
The Imperator Titan had not come alone. Two warlords and a reaver marched alongside it, like the hangers-on of a Skollum bully. Cassim could see no sign of a warhound picket or Skitari escort, but with engines as large as this, what need had they of any skirmish screen? The ground shook and cracked at its passing, and Cassim could only watch in mute awe as the mightiest war machine he had ever seen swept past him like an uprooted hive on mountainous legs.
What do we do?
Breathed Moderati Vorich. What indeed? To fight such a monster was suicide. But its path would see it cross the Tempest Line in a little over 9 minutes, and then they would have to fight it. They would be as ants against a bullgrox, but even ants could bring down a larger beast with enough numbers. As his now active surveyors gathered what information they could on the might of the Imperator, Cassim knew that Tempestus had not the guns to defeat such a terrifying opponent.
We follow it, said Cassim, and we wait.
Wait for what?
Asked Vorich. Cassim looked down at his medallion, again, wishing he could touch it.
To see if this is the day we die, he said.
Dahlia screamed as the howling gale of psychic energy enveloped her, feeling it tear at her like a malicious hurricane. She heard screaming voices that clawed at the inner surfaces of her skull and whispers she could not possibly be hearing, but which sounded as clear as though she heard them lying on her bed in the middle of the night. White light filled the chamber, the walls blurring in a rippling haze thrown off by the roaring column of silver that flared from the dome's apex and speared down towards Jonas Mylus upon his throne. She heard the metallic ring of the doorway closing behind her and spared a brief thought for Caxton and the others. Her robes billowed in the grip of powerful etheric winds, her skin raw and scoured by invisible energies that passed through her skin to the marrow and beyond. Billowing ghosts of light swarmed the chamber, fleeting, unnatural forms that defied description and which lingered uncomfortably in the darkest reaches of her imagination. Clouds of feelings filled the chamber. Thunderheads of anger, zephyrs of regret, hailstorms of longing, hurricanes of love and betrayal. Emotions and meaning surrounded her, though how such concepts could be given physical, visible form was a mystery to her. Dahlia took a step into the chamber, feeling her will erode in the face of the primal energies that surrounded her and infused her at the same time.
"Jonas!"
she yelled, the words fleeing her mouth in a gush of red. At first she feared it was blood, but the color in the air vanished almost as soon as it had appeared. The noise filling the chamber was incredible, like the death scream of an entire race, or the birth pangs of another. All emotion and knowledge was here, and Dahlia realized that this was the ether. This was the realm beyond the one her senses could consciously perceive. This was the source of all knowledge, and the source of the greatest danger imaginable. This was what she had allowed Jonas Mylas to be exposed to. The thought galvanized her steps, and she forced her way through the maelstrom of light and color, feeling the energies unleashed by the psychers in the coffered ceiling bleed off as they began to die. She could feel their lives ending, dissipating into the cacophony of light and noise. She wept with sympathetic pain, feeling each death as a splinter of needle-sharp agony in her mind. Dahlia shielded her eyes as she drew closer to the dais, seeing Jonas Mylas convulsing upon the throne, illuminated by the blinding light of the Astronomicon. His head jerked spasmodically from side to side, his mouth a blur of motion as he screamed and yammered streams of words too fast to be understood. She pushed her way up the steps towards him, dropping to her knees to better fight against the gales of energy and howling ghosts that swarmed the dais.
"Jonas!"
she called, reaching out to him. She couldn't reach him, and crawled inch by inch towards him. His screaming was undimmed, the words flooding from him so fast in an ululating howl of pain. Fire blazed in his eyes, crackling with an ancient power, the power of something far greater than anything mankind had ever known. At last Dahlia reached the top of the dais and saw that the storm of psychic energy swirled around the throne, yet never touched it, as though some invisible, antithetical barrier was holding it back. The throne shone as though illuminated from within by some vast, elementally powerful force. Though she and her compatriots had struggled so hard to create it, she now wished they had failed utterly. She wished to be rid of her gift and the consequences of what it had done. Even as she formed the thought, her limbs jerked, and she rose to her feet in the manner of a marionette lifted by its puppeteer. Dahlia cried out as her limbs obeyed the unknown imperatives manipulating her body, and she stared into the face of Jonas Mylas. The fire that burned in his eyes spilled outwards to engulf his entire body, pouring over him like blazing mercury. Her screams matched his, and the restraints that had bound him to the throne fell away, unmade by the silver fire that crawled over his flesh like a living thing. The empath rose from his throne, a living being of illuminated silver, with the light of unknown suns burning in his eyes. Dahlia could not meet his gaze, fearful that the power there would consume her were she to stare into it for too long. Beneath the inner luminescence that filled his body, she could see his flesh disintegrating like ice before a flame.
"I have seen it,"
he hissed, his voice sounding as though echoing from somewhere impossibly distant and deep.
"All knowledge."
"Oh, Jonas, I'm sorry."
"Sorry? No, Dahlia, I won't have your pity,"
said Jonas, fire writhing in his mouth as he spoke, his voice growing fainter with every word.
"I have seen the truth, and I am free. I know it all. The Emperor slaying the Dragon of Mars, the grand lie of the Red Planet, and the truth that will shake the galaxy. All forgotten by man in the darkness of the labyrinth of night."
Jonas Mylas stepped towards Dahlia, and the psychic winds were pushed away from her, as though by his very presence. As he drew closer to her, Dahlia heard the whine of great machinery powering down and the thump of closing relays as power to the Akashic Reader was finally shut off. The light of the Astronomicon still filled the chamber, and the winds of psychic energy still roared and seethed at its edges. But their power was diminishing. The mundane features of the space began returning, the marble floor, the sensation of mass and solidity, the heat of the air, and the smell of burned flesh.
"Quickly, look at me, Dahlia,"
said Jonas with desperate urgency.
"Look at me and know your destiny."
She forced her head up and stared into the face of Jonas Mylus, as the light in his eyes was extinguished and the last of his human flesh faded away to oblivion. The connection lasted the briefest fraction of a second, but that was enough. Dahlia screamed until she had no more breath, and took refuge from horrors that should never be borne by mortal brains in the black sleep of unconsciousness. Princeps Sharak followed the inbound tracks on the manifold. The Imperator Titan was closing fast, surface scans of its identity markers revealing its name to be Aquila Ignis, an engine constructed in the Daedalia forge yards far to the south of Tharsis. Its princeps, if such a vast machine could be commanded by just one man, was making no effort to conceal its power, and Sharak fed the flow of data being collected on the terrible engine into the gunbox recorders of his war machine. If the time ever came when they had to fight this engine, it would pay to be prepared. With the unmasking of the Imperator, the howling binary interference had lifted, the storms that had whipped the dust into the air with such force dissipating as though they had never existed. The vox crackled as the engines of Tempestus restored communications, each one filling the airwaves with excited chatter at the incredible sight marching towards Ascreus Mons. Raptoria and Astrus Lux shadowed the Imperator, keeping a safe distance from it and its escorting warlords.
"Do you have firing solutions to that engine?" asked Sharak.
"Yes, my princeps," said Bannon hesitantly. "But if we open fire, it'll vaporize us in an instant. We can't fight something that big."
The Imperator blotted out everything around it, a walking mountain that impossibly moved closer with thunderous footsteps. Sharak wished the rest of his legio were here alongside him. To be standing directly in the path of such a titanic creation, a fearsome miracle of construction and innovation, was a prospect no man should have to face alone. Raptoria and Astrus Lux would fight alongside him, and the Skitari weapons platforms would add their weight of fire, but they would be of little real use when the mighty engines started shooting. For all intents and purposes, Sharak was alone, his greatest fear as a princeps. With Princeps Cavallerio's battle group, they would at least have a chance of wounding the beast, and might even best it, but without them.
"Time to the Tempest Line,"
asked Sharak, sweating profusely despite the cool air in the carapace cockpit.
3 minutes, my princeps," said Dolan.
"Come on, turn away, damn you, turn,"
hissed Bannon, and Sharak echoed his sentiment as the seconds ticked by with the inexorably slow slide of thick engine oil. Then the manifold crackled, and the blessed voice of the Stormlord came over the vox.
"Engines of the Legio Mortis," said Princeps Cavallerio, his voice stentorian and unequivocal. "You are on course to cross the Tempest Line, whereupon you will be in breach of the Tharsis Non-Aggression Pact as signed by Princeps Acheron of Legio Mortis and Princeps Baca of Legio Tempestus at the First Council of Cydonia. Turn back now, or you may be fired upon."
Sharak watched the manifold as Cavallerio's engines marched up through the Western Palladus, billowing clouds of dust swirling in their wakes. To have reached Ascreus Mons in such time must have torn the hearts from their reactors, but they were here, and that was what mattered.
"Engines of Legio Mortis, respond immediately," demanded Cavallerio, and Sharak could hear the strain in the Stormlord's voice.
He checked the manifold, getting elevated biometric and reactor readings from the Victrix Magna. The thunderous form of the Imperator did not slow, and Sharak saw that it was moments from crossing the Tempest Line, whereupon it would be in the territory of Legio Tempestus. His mouth was dry, and he took a sip from the hydration straw at his cheek.
"Legio Mortis, respond!"
demanded Cavallerio, and Sharak's heart swelled with pride as the stately form of Victrix Magna marched to stand alongside Metallus Sabrina, firm in the path of the colossal Imperator.
15 seconds to the Tempest Line," warned Moderati Bannon.
Tharsis Hastatus, Arcadia Fortis, and Vulpus Rex took position alongside Cavallerio's engine, and the entire strength of Legio Tempestus on Mars stood before the mightiest war engines of Legio Mortis.
"This is your final warning, Mortis," bellowed Cavallerio.
Dreadful terror settled in Sharak's gut as Moderati Bannon said,
"Tempest Line breached, my princeps,"